From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Korean Context. I'm your host, Jenna Gibson. There's only one big story this week, and of course, it's the 2016 election. The votes are in, everything's counted, and Donald Trump is officially going to be the 45th president of the United States of America. So a lot of surprises, a lot of processing going on, a lot of interesting things that we're going to be following as Trump starts planning for his administration. With these things in mind, we're here with KEI President and CEO Donald Manzullo, who served in the U.S. House of Representatives for 20 years, from 1993 to 2013, representing the state of Illinois. Congressman Manzullo is also chair of the House Subcommittee on Asia and the Pacific. Congressman Manzullo, of course, has a lot to say about this election and how it can affect Korea and Asia more broadly. So I'd like to get right into it. So I'm curious, what were your initial reactions? Were you surprised when you saw the election results start rolling in?
Well, it was quite interesting. An unexpected win, totally unexpected win. I thought that we would turn on the TV about 8 o'clock, and by 10 o'clock, Hillary Clinton would be giving her victory speech, and that would have been it. But obviously, things did not turn out as a lot of people anticipated.
Right. I think a lot of people were taken completely by surprise here. Pretty much all the polls, all the pundits, everyone was anticipating a Clinton win right up until the voting closed and results started coming in. So what in your mind were some of the things we missed here? What was the disconnect between the prediction and this result?
The problem is people don't like being stereotyped. Americans don't like being put in boxes, given points plus or minus based upon who they are, the amount of education they have, or where they live. And as a result of years and years and years of the press, many in the press, not all the press, obviously, and the pollsters trying to define who Americans are, Americans decided in this election that they will define who they are and not be defined by anybody. And so when we look at words such as traditionally red states or traditionally blue states, the voters said, we are who we are, and we're going to vote our conscience, and we don't care about traditions, and we don't care about pollsters. And what they were saying is that we feel disenfranchised, we feel left out, and this is our way to strike back and get our country back. That's the mood in America.
So I think that ties in really well with a piece you just published in the National Interest, which specifically was about trade, but basically talks about why American voters have turned their backs on trade and why the mood has shifted on trade, but also in general in the United States. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, Heather Conley is the head of the European department at CSIS. About 3 weeks ago, she wrote a letter, a little op-ed, talking about the fact that the elites, and she described herself as, when she's a wonderful lady that works at a think tank, as we do here at KEI, they're at one place, and the people impacted are at another place, and there's this huge disconnect to the point where the elites, as she calls it, are saying, well, if you don't agree with us, then there's something wrong. And I looked at that and I said, you know, she's right. I've been a student of politics, but more importantly, a student of people. Big difference. And you take a look at books such as Bowling Alone and The End of Power, books that take a look at what's happening to people, not only in the United States, but across the world. You see that in spite of all the mass communications we have, we are talking more and communicating less, and that we're becoming more isolated, more insular, more lonely, and feel more left out. I've been talking about that for years. Been a member of Congress for 20 years and being very close to the people that I represented, you know that it's something you can't describe, you can feel. And the American people decided in this election that no longer do they want to be left behind, that they will vote for, get this, a billionaire to whom they can relate because he's an outsider, as opposed to somebody like Hillary Clinton with some pretty impressive credentials, who was running for the leader of the free world. That's what happened. They struck back. Now, what does that mean in terms of America's role in the world? It doesn't mean anything. It simply means it's a change in government. Barack Obama brought about an abrupt change. He ran on the theme of change because people want change. No one ever defined what change is, but change, the definition of change is what it isn't, and that is that you want something different, even though you can't define what it is that you want to change. That's what happened in Obama's campaign. It was a good theme. Now Trump runs on, it's not just a matter of change, it's a matter of turning everything upside down and restarting the institutions that are more responsive to the people, and trying to go back literally decades and decades to the founding of the Republic, where people had a lot more say on an individual basis. I tell you, this is not only a great study in political science, but it's an eye-opener to the people of this country and how smart they are in listening. You may disagree with how they voted, but the fact is that they voted in huge numbers, and especially in rural areas, because the people in the rural areas wanted to overcome the other people, the other half of America in the cities. Quite an election.
One example that I really liked in your piece, the one that you just published about trade, is that when you were talking about manufacturing, you really dug into the idea that there are some images and connotations that people have about trade related to manufacturing. And you mentioned that there's an image in people's minds of padlocked gates and broken windows, and you can really visualize a plant that was closed because of trade. But there's rarely an image of, you know, say a groundbreaking ceremony and a new plant that has just opened or expanded, creating more manufacturing jobs here in the United States. So how do you think these imaging problems or this disconnect there has played a role in how Americans view trade and also how they view the world around them?
You have to picture this. A blue-collar worker looking at a chained gate versus somebody in a suit wearing a plastic hard hat that won't protect against anything, with a shovel trying to dig dirt in anticipation of a new job. And really, most of the jobs that we have lost in this country are not due to international trade. A lot of it has to do with automation, with efficiencies. I mean, I visited over 500 factories when I was a member of Congress, and you could just see the how more and more productive American manufacturers are becoming. So it's a combination of all kinds of things, but in the end, if you're the one who's lost his job, and millions of Americans have, because the plant has closed, it doesn't mean anything to you if a plant opens up 200 miles away and you can't sell your house because you're underwater and you perhaps don't have the training for that new job. A lot of things can be fixed. It's just, among other things, that's what Trump talked about trade. He was talking about all the disaffected workers, and people can relate to that.
Okay, so let's turn now to Korea. Of course, we're the Korea Economic Institute, so we're watching the potential impacts of this election very closely. And we know that our friends in Seoul are watching very closely as well. So what do you see in the first, say, 100 days or the first year of a Trump presidency? Are there any changes that you see a Trump administration bringing for Korea right away?
None. The U.S. commitment to Korea is 70 years old. It was started by a president who did not run for re-election because he thought the Korean War, because he knew it was an unpopular war to get involved with coming so soon after World War II, but doing the right thing. And the alliance between the U.S. and Korea has been stronger ever since, mostly because the Koreans have never forgotten the sacrifice of the American soldier. I had two ambassadors come out to my congressional district. And each time they said, "Don will come out, but I want to have a luncheon for the Korean War veterans." It was awesome. We were at Memorial Hall in Rockford, Illinois, and one veteran got up and he said, "You know," he said, "I was involved in two wars." He said, "No one's ever thanked me except you." And that's the commitment that the Republic of Korea has made to the American soldier, and the American people have never forgotten the gratitude of the Koreans. I mean, this is the basis of the relationship. I mean, there's a real love between Americans and Korea based upon the fact that Koreans know the Americans are responsible for their freedom, and Americans know that Koreans honor that and respect it. It's quite a relationship. That relationship is not going to be moved by any election. I was in Congress under several different administrations. Never did anybody question the commitment of the United States to Korea. Never. And it's not going to happen under this administration either. They may take a look at the amount of money for sharing the cost of the base, but that goes on periodically anyway. I mean, that's nothing new. I just don't see any changes taking place. But it's an opportunity for Korea to engage even more with members of Congress, which is one of the things that I do here as President COKNI.
One of the major issues that the Trump administration will have to be aware of and tackle is North Korea. We've seen a serious escalation from Pyongyang in the last few years, including two nuclear tests this year and an increase in the number of missile tests. So how do you see him moving forward and dealing with the North Korea issue?
Well, you've had the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, and the Obama administration deal with North Korea, and where are we? I don't want to call it failure, but maybe it is. It's bipartisan failure. You really have four choices on what a country can do with North Korea. You can bomb them. That's not going to happen. No one wants that. Trump doesn't want that, obviously, either. You can sanction them, and that may or may not work. You can ignore them, or you could talk with them. So there really is no unique North Korean strategy that Mr. Trump would have or Hillary Clinton would have. I mean, I voted back in 1993 for President Clinton's accords on North Korea and, you know, the whole deal on giving them different types of energy in exchange for a promise to discontinue or not even start their nuclear program. That didn't work. Nothing has worked. So if nothing has worked so far on U.S. policy towards North Korea, what would we expect coming from the Trump administration? But those are the only four alternatives. And obviously, invading North Korea or taking out the reactor, I mean, that's not going to happen.
So, as I've said at the beginning, we've all been watching the election and the campaign very closely, and we'll certainly continue to do so now that we have our president-elect, Donald Trump. Before we go, is there anything else that you want to say or any other closing thoughts about the election and its potential impacts on Asia?
Well, it's I've been through 20 elections myself as a student of history. You take a look at, if you want to call them disruptive elections, I mean, this might be compared to the horrible election of 1800 when John Adams and Thomas Jefferson got into it. I mean, it was a horrible election. I mean, it was And back in those days, the people who voted, it was almost 100% literacy. They had their own newspapers and their and the sheets that they handed out, and what things that they said against each other was just incredible. But and this was a pretty tough campaign. I just don't know of an exchange of insults that insulting entire people. And in spite of all of this, this is what's unique. I think in the end, people set aside all the foibles and all the baggage, call it if you want, of both candidates, and in the end said, okay, well, they both have a lot of problems, but maybe we'll look through all this and see who is the person that could best represent so many millions of Americans who feel left out. And that's why they went with Trump, if you want to simplify it.
All right. Thanks so much for taking your time to sit down with me and talk about this election and to share all your great insights.
Sounds good. Thank you.
That's all for this episode of Korean Context. If you enjoy our podcast, please take a moment to subscribe and review our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And we'll see you here again next week with another great episode.